May it please the court, I am Leon Greenberg, and I am arguing today on behalf of the appellants. I'm requesting that the court allow me to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Right, you're by phone, so I'm not sure that, if you see a courtroom clock, I'll try to help you out.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are two fundamental errors with the district court's analysis of the qualified immunity issue presented by this appeal. The first is that the Nevada State Court in the Stratton case did not just establish that Mr. Decker had a non-discretionary duty to amend the actuarial table that's at issue. It expressly ordered him to amend that actuarial table. And this is something that is never mentioned by the district court.
Mr. Greenberg, Judge Bennett has a question.
Yes.
Okay, so counsel, my question is where in the record did the court or the hearing officer or anyone order the defendant as opposed to ordering the DIR? So where is the order to the defendant? Where is the order to the defendant in this case?
The order, Your Honor, is made to the DIR. This is correct, and it is at page 92 of the record.
I have that, and that's something that your predecessor drafted, right? Because these were findings drafted by the law firm representing the parties there. And what I hear is that it says, ordering DIR to provide an updated actuarial table. So where does that put the defendant here on notice that if he doesn't personally take an action, he is going to be personally liable in damages for a personal violation of your client's constitutional right?
Your Honor, this was a reasoning offered by the magistrate judge in her report and recommendation. This was not commented upon by the district judge in her decision. At pages 19 to 21 of my brief, I do address this issue, Your Honor. And it is clear from the record that the DIR administrator and the petitioner, or Mr. Decker, are one and the same as an official capacity as the state actor that is at issue here. And as I cite in the authorities, for example, at page 21, this was in Walters, where
counsel, like, for example, at ER 82, the last page of the appeals officer's ruling, he says, the administrator shall hold claimant's impairment award in abeyance until such time as DIR complies. So the hearings officer, the appeals officer, Mr. Leichuk, in his order, separately directed the administrator to do something and the DIR to do something. And you're seeking to hold a person liable in damages for a personal violation of your client's federal constitutional rights. And I'm just having trouble seeing what put your client on clear notice that his failure to use an actuarial table or to update an actuarial table would make him liable for a constitutional violation.
Your Honor, by law, the DIR, the Division of Industrial Relations, must act through its administrator, Mr. Decker. He is the only person who has the authority to issue a new regulation in compliance with the court's order in Stratton. Therefore, the order that was issued referring to the DIR referred to Mr. Decker. And again, to the extent that there are authorities that have examined this issue, and they are discussed in my brief, in the Walters case, the order that was violated was not actually issued against the three defendants who were the prison officials who were found to not have qualified immunity in that case. And as the court reasoned in Walters, those three officials were connected with the institution, They were aware of the circumstances. They were in positions of responsibility. They could not claim qualified immunity because the prior court order that was issued did not specifically name them. They were subject to that order as part of their position within the institution. This issue has been looked at, as I said, in respect to other cases that are cited at page 21 of my brief, Your Honor. So I don't see how Mr. Decker can evade responsibility or can still claim that he was not subject to the order of the state court in Stratton because it didn't name him personally. It did direct the DIR. Excuse me, Your Honor.
But no, that's fine. But counsel, I mean, there is a difference between somebody who is acting in their official capacity being liable to follow an order directed to their department in their official capacity and putting someone on notice that they're personally liable for damages for the actions of their agency. I mean, obviously the 11th Amendment would have prevented you from suing Nevada in federal court for your client's damages, and I assume there's some reason you didn't do it in Nevada state court, but I'm having trouble seeing a case that would put this person on notice that in any kind of analogous situation, failing to promulgate an annuity table makes him liable for damages, for violation personally of a constitutional right.
Well, Your Honor, I would draw your attention to the record at page 87, and this is discussed at page 19 of my brief, is that the caption of the final order names the administrator of the Division of Industrial Relations as the party, Your Honor. That is Mr. Decker. He is named. It's not the state of Nevada. It is the administrator, which is Mr. Decker. In the submissions to the court, and again, this is discussed at page 20.
I thought, counsel, Mr. Greenberg, I thought that you just said that to the extent that Decker was named, he was named in his official capacity, that he was not a personal party to the litigation.
He was not. His name does not appear in the caption of the Stratton case. This is correct. He's named in this case in his personal capacity.
Right. At most, he's basically in his official capacity. And the problem, I have the same problem as Judge Bennett does, which is that when you're sued in your personal capacity, that's not a suit against the individual. That's a suit against the agency.
And Your Honor, the agency, the DIR administrator, was the one who was subject to the order in Stratton.
How do you make the jump from the agency and official capacity to personal liability, which is what's been alleged in this action? And what establishes that the defendant should have been aware, based on clearly established law, that he might be personally liable for what the department did or did not do?
Because the defendant is tasked by law with instituting the policies that are required, issuing the regulations that are required of his agency, Your Honor.
That's what you argued, but I'm still waiting to hear the precedent that makes clearly established law that should have made him aware that his own pocket is at risk. I haven't heard that yet.
Well, Your Honor, again, I would point to the Walters case, which is discussed on page 21 of my brief. It was the exact same situation there, where the order that was issued by the state court that was disobeyed did not name the officials who were found to be denied qualified immunity. But it did name the institution and the policy that was at issue that gave rise to the 1983 claim that was made in that case. It is the same situation here, Your Honor. Mr. Decker was the recipient of the Stratton order as the administrator of the agency. He was not free to simply ignore that order or believe that he did not have to follow it. The question for qualified immunity purposes is, did he have a non-discretionary duty to amend the table? Stratton said, yes, you do have a non-discretionary duty because you are the administrator of this agency, and this agency must do so, and you are the only person in the agency with the authority to issue this regulation we're ordering you to issue. There was no basis for Mr. Decker to doubt that he needed to comply with the Stratton order given those circumstances, Your Honor. That is why he cannot claim qualified immunity to the claim against him for damages personally for his failure to obey that order. He was certainly subject to contempt from the state court for failing to do that.
You're not asking us to review a decision, a contempt citation from the state court. You have instead brought an entirely separate federal action under 1983. So it's not enough to tell me that, well, yeah, we should have had him liable under Nevada state law. You've got to tell us why it is this individual should be held in his individual capacity liable under 1983. And it's not enough to say that, well, maybe we could have gotten a contempt citation under Nevada law.
Well, Your Honor, to answer your question, it's not a question of whether we could have gotten a contempt citation under Nevada law. It was a question as to whether he had a non-discretionary duty to make the regulation, to issue the regulation that was required to amend the table. He did. The Stratton order was issued, yes, to the agency, but he was in charge of the agency. There was no one at the agency who had the authority to issue that regulation except the DIR administrator, which was Mr. Stratton.
You're down to just a little over 3 minutes. I know you want to.
I would like to reserve my time if I can.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honors. Keel Ireland on behalf of Defendant Joseph Decker. And I'd just like to jump into what Judge Clifton was saying there at the end, which is this is a Section 1983 action. So they need to show the violation of a clearly established federal constitutional right. And whatever Stratton may have said about Nevada state law, that does not establish a federal constitutional right. And in fact, it cuts right against their argument, because we can see through Stratton that there was an adequate state procedure for getting your lump sum payments recalculated if you think there is something wrong with the actuarial table. So in fact, it was constitutionally sound. And even if it wasn't, plaintiffs have not pointed to any controlling authority showing that this was a clearly established constitutional violation. I'd also just like to briefly talk about the Walters case that I rely on quite a bit. That case is distinguishable for two reasons. One, that is an older case. It's almost 30 years old now. And qualified immunity doctrine has advanced quite a bit since then. So not clear that even the Eighth Circuit would come out the same way if it had those facts presented to it again. But in any case, what Walters was based on in-circuit authority in the Eighth Circuit, that where a person is held in custody beyond their release date, that is automatically a violation of the Due Process Clause. We don't need to look any further than that. And the reasoning, I think, is that if you hold someone in custody too long, that's just so clearly a serious deprivation of liberty that no other kind of analysis is necessary. And that's not applicable to the situation we have here, which is an alleged deprivation of property and an alleged deprivation of a government benefit. So I don't think that's applicable here. And unless there's any questions from the court, we just would ask that you affirm the judgment below.
I don't have any questions. Judge Clifton, Judge Bennett?
Thank
doesn't
you.
Appear that we have any questions for you, Mr. Ireland. Thank you for your argument today.
Thank you.
We're back to you, Mr. Greenberg, with a little over 3 minutes on the clock.
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to draw the court's attention to the other issue, which is discussed at page 21 to 22 of my brief, which is that even if Mr. Decker was not named in the Stratton order and personally subject to it, he, under concepts of preclusion, such as in the Meagher case, which looks to Nevada's law of preclusion, he would be bound by that order because he was a privy to that. The issue was litigated in Stratton by the DIR if it was to be considered a separate party. It was resolved. The DIR was ordered, in fact, to institute the change, to make the change to the actuarial table, and therefore he is precluded from disputing that he also had that non-discretionary duty because they were privies. They were bound together by the finding that was made in Stratton as a matter of preclusion. His qualified immunity in this case has to rest upon the fact that his duty here was of a discretionary. It was not of a mandatory or a non-discretionary nature. The district court agrees with that point. So what I'm trying to explain here is that if the court was to distinguish between the status of Mr. Decker and the DIR as an entity as being subject to the court's order, and to find that that raises a qualified immunity issue potentially, the court must go deeper here and consider the holding in NEGRA, and the question is to whether Mr. Decker nonetheless is bound by the Stratton order as a matter of preclusion under state law, because the court does need to consider state law, the Alcantara case. Again, this is discussed at pages 21 and 22 of my brief. And I would point out, to the extent that the authorities are out there which have examined this issue of qualified immunity in respect to orders from courts involving agencies or policies of government actors as a whole versus government individuals, in addition to the Walters case, discussed at page 21, you have the Tasker case, where the governor did not get qualified immunity when he violated an order commanding the release of prisoners. He wasn't actually a subject to that order, but he was aware of the order, and he blocked the release of those prisoners that had been ordered by the court. He was not able to claim qualified immunity in that situation for interfering with that order. It's the same situation here, Your Honors. Mr. Decker was the person in charge of the agency. There is, to allow him to invoke qualified immunity here and say he did not have a mandatory duty to amend the table is not in compliance with the law. Clearly he did, and that was the question that was uncertain in the prior case, the Shannon litigation, and I understand the state of the law at that time, which was before the Stratton decision, was unclear. It was not established that there was a non-discretionary duty. But that question was resolved in Stratton, and therefore Mr. Decker was required to take action to amend the table because he didn't have discretion to not amend it. I think I probably have consumed my time, and I don't want to overdo it with the court. You've been very patient. Is there any questions I can answer for the court?
No, we don't have any. I think we've got a pretty good handle on your argument today. Thank you very much to both sides. The matter is submitted for decision.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our argument calendar for today, so we'll recess until tomorrow morning.